I titled this message, Use It or Lose It. That phrase is most often used with physical skills. I'm sure that you all know that we need a certain amount of exercise in order to build and maintain muscle tone. That's why we golf, bicycle, play tennis, hike, walk, or jog. We enjoy the activity and we like the feeling of being in better shape. I was going to say we like the feeling of being in shape, but I have to say it, in better shape. What happens if we get an injury or just get lazy or for any other reason stop our exercise program? After a short time of inactivity, we find that when we get back to our sport, we can't perform as well as we did just before the layoff. We can't lift as much weight, we can't drive the ball as far, can't pedal up the hill all the way. What happened? We lost it. Use it or lose it. Reminds me of the gate in the old neighborhood that opened onto an alley. It was a backyard gate. And while the kids were young, they would use that back gate and go up the alley, visit their friends, and their friends would come and go through that gate. They'd pretend like it's the shortcut. And it probably was, because everybody's using the back doors, I think, to get to each other's houses. So it was shorter than going around on the sidewalk in the block. But as they got older, the neighborhood got older, the kids grew up, that gate didn't get used very much anymore. And so, after a time, that gate got so hard to open, it rusted shut. The hinges rusted shut. So that's what it's like, you know, if you lose it. You know, you get a little bit rusty. Use it or lose it applies to mental activities as well as physical activities. For example, a person can become better and better at solving crossword puzzles if they actually work crossword puzzles. Likewise, if you haven't solved any algebraic story problems in the last 20 years, you shouldn't be surprised if you're a little rusty. This morning, I would like to continue talking a little bit more about memory in general, which concerns mostly trivial things, and then show that God expects us to remember some things that are not at all trivial. Speaking of trivia, do you know which country the game of Trivial Pursuit was invented? In which country? Nobody? No guesses?
Germany?
No. Yeah, you know. Any others? It was invented in Canada. Yeah. Just a little bit of trivia there. So how is your memory? How is your memory, Jerry? Well, let's play a game. This is going to be interactive, please. I expect a little bit of audience participation. Okay, show of hands. Who has memorized the first psalm? Nobody. And yet when I say, blessed and happy is the man, you can come back and say, right. And that is the song that we sing that corresponds to Psalm 1. Let's try another one. Psalm 51, who has that memorized? But when I say, in thy loving kindness, Lord, yes. This tells us two things. Number one, repetition is a good teacher. And we all know that, right? Yes. Some of you have been singing these songs for over 50 years. And number two, Multiple factors help identify the memory. In this case, we have a melody and a certain amount of rhyming that helps us recall the hymn. Not just words. Kindergartners, how do they learn their alphabet mostly? They have a song and it rhymes in parts. And imagine everybody's thinking that A, B, C, D, right? Yeah. So somebody in education realizes that that works for memory. When our kids were small, a young Christian group came through our neighborhood selling records. They were probably all college age. And I was at work, but Judy related to me all that went on. They were selling, I don't remember whether it was different ones or not, but we bought one of the records. And it covered the Ten Commandments. And I remember the introductory song that said, sing it, you'll never forget it. And it was a long song. I don't remember the rest of the words. What part of it was, if you've something to remember, put it in a melody. And then it went on. You know, and truly, that worked. So we bought the LP, at least one of them. We might have bought more from him. But what was really interesting was the young lady that was with the group selling the records, you know, they didn't have a way of playing the record for us so we could hear. But she could sing. She could sing the record, you know, they knew the words, knew the melody, and had a wonderful singing voice, at least according to my wife, and was really, just really, really impressed with that. They were just so energetic, and it worked well. And we had that record for a long time, but we don't know what happened to it. We probably gave it to a younger couple that had younger kids after a time. So we see that various stimuli can trigger our memories. All five of our senses can come into play to round out a memory. When I think of my grandparents' home, I don't just see the house in my mind's eye, but I remember how the house smelled when my grandmother baked. And I also remember that the house made weird noises when it was all quiet, creaking noises. You know, so, you know, all of those factors come in to remind me of this one place. Similar to having our memories jogged by certain sentences, our recall is helped sometimes by having multiple events happen in a certain time frame. For example, I know approximately when the year our family drove to the beach from Portland and stayed at a rustic resort. My dad purchased an old 78 record playing jukebox there. And I remember we were able to get it into the 1955 Ford station wagon that we bought new. So that tells me that the year that we went to the resort was 55. Could have been 56, perhaps, but you know that factor, you know, of seeing that put into the station wagon and knowing that's when we had it, you know, can tell me what the year was. It's easier to remember times and events if your history is broken into many definable time periods. The first half of my life, there were many changes. I went to the same grade school from K through 6. But after that, we moved about 8 miles away from that house into a different school district, and they had junior highs. And so I went to seventh grade in one junior high. Well, then the border, the boundary was changed. So I went to eighth grade in another school. So I can connect memories you know, from K through six in one place, seventh grade here, eighth grade here. And then I started doing everything in fours. 4 years of high school, so I can relate things to that. 4 years going to, almost 4 years going to college. Well, I amassed a grand total of almost 2 years of credit. So sounds like some others have been there. And then I bailed out of college and did 4 years of Air Force. And after that, I got out, got a job, lasted about 4 years, and the plant closed. And it was about that time that we came into the church. And I got another job and stayed on that job for 29 years. We bought a house and we stayed in there for 33 years. And so all of that time now, it's such a wide range of time. You know, I can't pinpoint things like I could for the first part of my life. So it's much easier if you have these mileposts, or if you keep track of it some way, like some people write diaries, you know, and they can refer to those. But, you know, some of that, I don't even know sometimes when a certain song, you know, was that in the 80s or was that in the 90s? You know, when was that? You know, just kind of at a loss for that. Memory is an interesting subject. A lot of what we forget is trivial. We don't need it anymore. If we don't need it, we don't use it. And if we don't use it, we lose it. Although it's likely somewhere up in our brain, but it's just difficult to recall. Let's go to Numbers 15. In Numbers 15, and we're going to be reading verse 37 through 39. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, throughout the generations to come, you are to make tassels on the corner of your garments with a blue cord on each tassel. You will have these tassels to look at, and so you will remember all the commands of the Lord, that you may obey them and not prostitute yourselves by going after the lusts of your own heart and eyes." He gave the Israelites a tool to help them remember his commands. People are always trying different methods, different tools to trigger their memory. String around your finger, day planners, voice recorders. I knew a guy who would slip his watch off of his left hand and put it on his right hand so that he could remember something. But invariably, he'd look at the watch on the wrong wrist and say, "Now, what was that for? You know, why did I put that over there?" I have a trick to remind myself to run off the dishwasher. I take the dishwasher soap container after I pour it into the dishwasher, and I set it out on the counter so that I'll remember, you know, a little bit later to run off the dishwasher. And that's usually at night. And it works about half the time. I wake up in the morning and I see it and I say, "Oh, yeah." In Exodus 20, God is speaking directly to Moses. God is speaking directly to Moses, outlining first the Ten Commandments, and then in chapters 21, 22, and 23, various other laws. Let's look at Exodus 20, verse 8. Here God lists each one of the commandments, and I'm sure he wants us to remember and obey all 10, but only the fourth has the word "remember" associated with it. Remember the Sabbath. Let's read verse 8 through verse 11. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to your Lord God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Maybe the word remember distinguishes the fourth commandment as different and more important. God not only wants us to remember which day is the Sabbath, but also the reason why there is a Sabbath rest. He reminds us of who created all things in 6 days. Moving over to chapter 23, and God is still talking directly to Moses. Chapter 23, and in verse 13, it says, "Be careful to do everything I have said to you." Be careful. The King James Version says, "Be circumspect." I had to look up the word circumspect. I never used the word myself. And it says, it comes from two words, meaning the circum part is around, and the spec part is the looking. So what God is saying here is, look around. Be careful. Look around. Weigh the pros and cons. Be aware of the consequences. Don't take this lightly. Note well. Let's continue reading verse 13 through 17. Be careful. I'll read this part again. Be careful. Do everything I have said to you. Do not invoke the names of other gods. Do not let them be heard on your lips. And this part where he says, do everything I have said to you, also applies not only to what he just said, but also down through to the next chapter. Verse 14. 3 times a year you are to celebrate a festival to me. Celebrate the feast of unleavened bread for 7 days and eat bread made without yeast, as I commanded you. Do this at the appointed time in the month of Abib. In that month you came out of Egypt. For in that month you came out of Egypt. No one is to appear before me empty-handed. Celebrate the feast of harvest with the first fruits of the crops that you sow in your field. Celebrate the feast of ingathering at the end of the year when you gather your crops from the field. 3 times a year all the men are to appear before the sovereign God. Why does God have to remind us to keep the holy days? There are two answers. One is our track record. One is our track record. He knows how we are. After all, he made us. We're fallible, carnal human beings. Every time I read about the kings of Israel, it just boggles my mind. One king might reign for 20 years and do what is pleasing in God's eyes, and then his son will take over for him and will immediately turn to idolatry. We are so fickle, especially left on our own, you know, without God's help, we are just carnal human minds. And number two, why does God have to remind us of the holy day? Number two, because they are so important. The holy days point to and clarify God's plan of salvation for mankind, for all eternity. How can humans turn so quickly 180 degrees? I saw an interesting statistic. Saw that in 1990, Worldwide Church of God had 165,000 in attendance at 105 feast sites. I don't know if there are any accurate estimates nowadays, you know, because we have so many different groups. But I would guess that most of us know more than a dozen people who once attended the Feast of Tabernacles, but no longer do. Can you think of 12 people? I mean, it's pretty easy, isn't it, to think back on who you knew and what they're doing now. And I'm only talking about the ones who left, who quit. I'm not talking about the ones who are infirm or too old to get to the feast. And how many of us raised children in the church and now they have nothing to do with God's holy days? Those observances that God says, don't forget. Be circumspect. Use it or lose it. But maybe at some time we might be useful in encouraging some of them to come back. We know of two couples that are attending the feast again. Don't know if we had any real influence on them, but it shows that there's hope. Let's take a look at Galatians 6, verse 9 and through 10, 9 and 10. Galatians 6, verse 9 and 10. So we may be able to help those people again, perhaps. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. In the 2 or 3 weeks before atonement, there were brutal storms, earthquakes, a threatening volcano, leaders of nations rattling sabers, unrest all over the globe. According to the media, especially the social media, many people were downright scared, thinking the world was coming to an end. They are right. The world is coming to an end. But most of the population doesn't look at it, as a good thing. They can see that the world is becoming more and more dangerous, but unable to come up with the solutions. They have rejected the only one that has a solution, Almighty God. What a blessing it is to know God's plan. We don't need to worry or speculate on what horrendous event will plunge the world into unstoppable destruction. God's plan is set. It is sure. In Isaiah 14, verse 24 through 27, Isaiah 14, 24 through 27, this is actually a prophecy against Assyria. But if you think about this in thinking about God's plan for all time, for the salvation of mankind, and overlook a couple of the words in here, it applies to that. So God's plan is set. It is sure. Reading in verse 24, the Lord Almighty has sworn, surely, as I have planned, so it will be, and as I have purposed, so it will stand. I will crush the Assyrian in my land, on the mountains will trample him down, his yoke will be taken away from my people, and this burden removed from your shoulders. This is the plan determined for the whole world. This is the hand stretched out over all nations. For the Lord Almighty has purposed, and who can thwart him? His hand is stretched out, and who can turn it back? It is set, it is sure. And as the holy days that have been revealed to God's people point to and illuminate that plan, let's always remember the holy days. Use them so we won't lose them. I'd like to close with a quote from Fred Coulter that was in one of his sermons on a holy day, and I think it was in 2004. All the holy days are important to God, and they tell the plan of the story and the story that God wants us to know so that we can understand why we're here, where we're going, what God is doing, how he's doing it, approximately when he is going to do it, so we can have understanding, faith, and hope. That's why we have the holy days, unquote. And now, may God bless all of you here keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, and may he bless the thousands of others also keeping the feast. Firmly instill in each heart and mind the knowledge and the truth that these holy days point to.